Welcome to the NAR Commercial Intelligence Briefing, brought to you by the National Association of Realtors. I'm your host, Steve Lubetkin. In this program, Sam Foster of Jones Lang LaSalle and Amy Naraki, the Director of Real Estate from Cogent Communications. Sam and Amy were both featured speakers at NAR's recent mid-year meetings in Washington, D.C. Their presentation, The Tenant Rep and the Corporate Real Estate Director, An Anatomy of the Relationship. There was so much interest in their presentation, we thought it needed to get a wider audience, so we brought them back for this podcast. Sam Foster is a CCIM, and he's an executive vice president with Jones Lang LaSalle in Los Angeles. He leads their tenant representation group and represents several corporate 100 clients. He was previously a director at CB Richard Ellis and has affected or supervised transactions valued at more than $2.7 billion. Sam has a bachelor's degree from the University of Southern California, where he's also served as a guest lecturer. He's a faculty member with the CCIM Institute and a past president of the Los Angeles chapter. And he's authored one novel, Alpha Male, which was published in 2002. Amy Naraki is also a CCIM and is director of real estate for Cogent Communications, a multinational internet service provider with more than 1,500 locations and a 2011 real estate budget of approximately $25 million. Amy has 15 years of telecommunications real estate experience. She previously worked for Cypress Communications, the largest U.S. in-building telecommunications carrier. She played a critical role in the due diligence, acquisition, and disposition of several mid-sized telecommunications companies, and she's an experienced negotiator for office, warehouse, co-location, data centers, and license agreements worldwide. Amy was recognized as a President's Club winner for the last three companies she represented. Amy and Sam have formed a strong partnership through the Realtors Signature Series Speakers Bureau that's led to several collaborations. Sam joined us over Skype from his office in Los Angeles, and we picked up Amy over the telephone from her office in Chicago. Amy and Sam, thanks for joining us on the NAR Commercial Intelligence Briefing Podcast.
Thank you very much, Steve, for having us.
Steve, we're delighted to be here with you and with NAR.
Thanks very much. Sam, let's start with you. I know you're a tenant representative and work with Amy as she manages her company's real estate needs. So to set the stage for the listeners, why don't you share how your professional relationship developed and talk a little bit about what you appreciate about what each of you brings to the table?
One of the things I do, besides my tenant representation practice, is that I instruct for CCIM, a class in site and location analysis, a couple of times a year, largely because it's just great fun to get out of the office and do something completely different. And a few years back, I was teaching such a class at the University of Southern California, and there was this woman in the class who was consistently brighter than I was, knew more about what I was talking about than I did, and you could tell was genuinely trying to hold herself in check to keep it from taking the class away from me. And that was Mrs. Naraki, and she and I have been pals ever since then. And we just thought it would be fun to do something together. So that's why we're doing this.
Now, the two of you also collaborate as public speakers, and I know that your session at NAR's mid-year meeting was pretty well received. What was the overall objective that you had for that particular audience?
I wanted to provide a corporate real estate perspective to NAR members on how to get hired. I wanted to provide kind of some marketing strategies, methods for them to be successful, and generally some creative ideas to help increase revenue in their practice.
And from my perspective, as the lecture title indicated, my perspective was to tell clients after Amy hires you, after you've done the things that Amy tells you to do to win a corporate real estate assignment, how do you, in fact, perform that assignment in such a way that she's not only pleased, but she hires you back because you've exceeded her expectations?
You're making several points for tenant reps to keep in mind if they want to best serve a client. Sam, you say clients want predictability. Tell us a little bit more about that.
In Amy's position, Amy and everybody like Amy that I work with manages their portfolio from an Excel sheet. To Amy, real estate is simply a means to an end. It is not an end of itself. And Amy has a budget, and her firm has a budget for real estate cost. she is absolutely judged by her ability to perform to that Excel sheet. And so everybody that she hires to work for her, she needs to expect the same thing from. That is to say, this is what we have planned for this. This is what needs to happen. You need to make it happen. Now, most people in Amy's position have some flexibility on an individual assignment. It's not that she has no context with the market and is calling me and telling me to make things happen that can't possibly occur. But once we come to an agreement about what the timing and the cost are going to be, she's judged on her ability to make that happen. So she judges me on my ability to make that happen.
Sam and I actually had some specific examples. In two cases, property taxes charged from the landlord and other operating expenses were greater than expected. And in order to solve that problem, we went back to the landlord and negotiated a longer payout so that we could continue to meet our budget and continue to meet our predictable spreadsheet that we had to achieve. So not only, you know, the upfront, but when a mistake or, you know, something that happens that we can't control occurs, Sam was actually able to negotiate a longer payout and solve the problem so that we can still reach our goal.
Now, one of the other things that you've mentioned is the importance, the critical role that communications has in the ongoing relationship. Is there anything new and different there? Keeping clients informed with new information is certainly important. Are there any other new considerations or new methods that you're using to do that kind of communications?
One thing that Sam did for me that I found helpful is that we scheduled on our Outlook calendar, for example, every other Thursday at 1 o'clock my time, he was on my calendar. And even if it was for 10 minutes to check in or, you know, we had a longer call to review a lease, that pre-scheduled time was excellent. So we use, obviously, the phone, email, and I did text Sam quite a bit during I have 7 or 8 deals going at once, and he would be representing me on a couple of the deals. Texting actually is something that we use for business. So it's a little bit new and different, but also the scheduled phone calls helped.
And Amy is quite a bit younger than I am, and you can tell it in what she says, because I think it is absolutely almost paradigmatic of business today that it is an older generation that is reliant upon email and a younger generation that prefers texting. The other thing, Steve, that I would add to that is that, and Amy and I do not do this, but there are many firms that do. There are software packages that are available, some of them proprietary. Jones Lang LaSalle has our own proprietary version. There are several other firms that have proprietary versions. But there are also public versions of software where you can do it, where each and every assignment is put on a web-based system with the Gantt chart or the timeline for getting things done on there and all of the documents associated with the deal on there. And then the service provider updates it every time something happens that moves the puck down the ice. And so that Amy or any of her colleagues, no matter where they are, no matter what the time zone issues are, can be in London and it can be the middle of the night in LA, and she can hop on and say, oh, here's what happened yesterday. That is not something Amy and I happen to do together, but it is a software capability that many corporate real estate firms do use.
Now, Amy, you mentioned that getting good information is important to you, for example, knowing when a property is coming on the market, and that comes from having a good relationship, among other things. What are some other examples of that?
Well, there's two specific other examples I can think of. One is when Sam was representing Cypress on an Orange County office relocation. And he actually provided some, quote unquote, yet to be released public information that a landlord had missed, actually defaulted on a loan, and that the landlord was in a bad financial position, which helped Cypress's position in the negotiation and actually helped us get a much better deal. So he knew information that was not quite public, and it helped in our deal, and it helped Cypress get a better financial package. And secondly, Cypress, much like Cogent now, the company I work for, is in the business of providing internet services. And tenants choose their internet service when they're moving. So Sam, Jones Lang LaSalle, and other brokers know what businesses are moving because that's part of their funnel. They're targeting tenants to move for prospects for themselves. And sharing that kind of information helps Cogent because it increases our core revenue. If we can find out when businesses are moving, that's our same prospect list. So when Sam shares that information, that helps us greatly.
The other thing that I might add on there, Steve, if I may hitchhike on Amy's comments, is that in the transaction in Orange County where we found out the landlord's financial position, in addition to help negotiate a better deal because he's weak, there are a couple of other things that come out of that. But one of them is the tenant improvement allowance. It really affects how you need to handle a tenant improvement allowance if you know that the landlord's about to go broke, because if the lease obligates him to pay the TIs and he goes broke, you can't get blood out of a stone. So those need to be perhaps funded up front, put into a letter of credit, move somewhere where you know you've got them. But the other and probably more important thing than that is if Amy's going to sign a lease with somebody who's about to go broke, it is absolutely incumbent upon me to ensure that she's got an SNDA provision that requires whoever is taking over the building to honor that lease.
That's a good point. I understand there are also some other subtleties. Amy, you've mentioned that knowing who the real estate director reports to can be important. What should a tenant rep know about why that's important?
Well, I think it's important because the way a tenant rep broker approaches the director may be different. If the director reports to a CFO, decisions might be based more on quantitative factors such as 60% rent recovery, financial predictability, taxes, operating expenses. But when a real estate person reports to the CEO, it seems like they make more global decisions in a larger viewpoint. They take into account the distance to the executive team's house, the use of the space, the location, even the feel, and those same factors may be as important as the financials. So if someone's calling on me and I report to the CFO, they might take a financial approach, whereas if the director reports to a CEO, it might be, you know, let's look at a better location or something that's closer to your customers. And I think each executive has their own criteria, which is good to know before you call on the real estate director.
What are some other ways that the rep can add value throughout the transaction?
There's several other ways, such as lease comments, knowing what an owner will and will not agree to. There are some nuances of California landlords, whether they agree to tenant improvements, moving allowances, and what they've done with other tenants. So knowing that local information, as Sam does, is critical and adds a lot of value throughout the transaction.
There are also some subjective things that come from knowing the market that really make a potential difference, but they have not to do with the financials of negotiation, but the environment. Amy, you tell it so much better than I do, but will you tell the Hooters story?
Oh, yes. Sam was looking for some space in Orange County for an office, and it was going to be an office for a staff of technicians and engineers, kind of all younger male, young 20s. It was the employee profile, and I didn't have a chance to actually go and see our final choices, and we narrowed it down to two. And Sam was very polite to give me a call and say, you know, one of the main differences is the one particular space is right across the street from Hooters, and several other locations that you may not want your staff to be at, you know, starting at 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So he was very helpful, and we did end up choosing the other office.
Sam, I know it's important to be clear about what you can and cannot do, so why don't you give us a little bit more information about that?
I could not agree with you more. It's really important that Amy know what I can do, but also what I can't. And my solution to that is to present her with a timeline on deals showing the steps originally as I see them, and we may modify the steps on the timeline based on the way she sees it. But my hope in this is that we come to an agreement about all of the things that need to be done, whose responsibility it is to do them, and what the time frame for getting them done is. That puts me in the position with her of having firmly committed to specific things and gives her some comfort level. But it also puts me in the position of having a written document that says, these are the things that I have told you I can and will do. Now, I admit I don't write anything down at the bottom of it that says, and this to the exclusion of all others, you can't expect anything else of me. But it is implicit that that is my commitment to her.
And imagine there are also times when a rep should support a client, even when in that specific instance, there's nothing in it for him or her. Amy, I think you had an example of that when Cogent had to reduce its real estate budget, which was not good news for a tenant. How did the two of you work through that?
Well, the one that I remember, and Steve, I'm not sure this is the example you're talking about, but Amy was going to reduce the size of an office in Culver City. It was going to get smaller. And we did some work on locating on first whether that landlord would be willing to agree to reduce the size of the space, and in fact, whether he could based on layout. And when that wasn't going to work out, then to try to find some smaller spaces. And in the end, it turned out that they closed the entire office. So literally, the only thing that we could do to be helpful was to introduce her to a furniture broker who might be able to lay off all that modular furniture. There was certainly nothing in that for us in a specific transaction. But our relationship is with Amy, and we do for her what serves her. And that doesn't always mean you get paid.
Cypress, when we realized we were not renewing the Culver City office, I understood that Sam would lose a deal, and I felt bad about that. We had an edict to cut 20% of Cypress's real estate budget, but Sam actually helped me review the entire portfolio and made suggestions on renewing and reducing real estate expenses at other locations, which I ended up hiring him on. So even though he didn't get to renew the Culver City office, in fact, I think he got a lot of other business from helping create the plan going forward and helping Cypress meet the goal of cutting 20% of the real estate budget.
And that sort of plays into that overall theme of building good ongoing relationships.
Correct. And also hiring the right person. You know, Sam met all the requirements that I was looking for. Educated, connected, personable, and ultimately someone who would help Cypress more than anyone else, and someone who worked for a national firm with lots of resources. So just hired the right person at the right time.
Sam and Amy, any other thoughts on the overall topic that you want to add before we wrap things up?
I do think one comment, and it's a mindset comment, Steve. It's not specific. But this last question has rather led to it. If one seeks to be a tenant representative, one has to take that seriously. I represent Cogent. I represent Cypress. And that means in your representation that the rep is doing what is in their tenant's best interest. And it may not mean always get paid on the deal. It may mean providing over time a great deal of insight into the market that Amy can't have from an office in Chicago. But it is the tenant's rep job to win Amy's loyalty. And sometimes that's done with contracts, but more frequently it is simply done by exactly that, winning Amy's loyalty. There are very few corporate real estate executives who wake up in the morning and say, how can I beat up some broker today? And in fact, they're very willing to be responsive to normal human kindnesses. And so my job, I view, is indeed giving Amy what she needs. And when the time comes that there is an item to be done that has a fee associated with it, I presume she's going to send it my way. And so far, over a fairly long career, that's worked out.
Well said.
Very good. Well, Sam Foster and Amy Naraki, thank you very much for joining us today on the NAR Commercial Intelligence Briefing Podcast.
Thanks very much, Steve.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
It's a great conversation. Bye. And that'll wrap things up for another Commercial Intelligence Briefing Podcast from the Commercial Division of the National Association of Realtors. Join us again for another program in this series. And until then, this is Steve Lubetkin. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you out there on the net. Take good care.